Hello and welcome. We're ready to do our case tonight. I'm so excited that you joined us. It's the case of the ski slope, the club, and the rope toe. It's known as the Red Hill Outing Club versus Robert Hammond. Let me tell you a story, because it's an interesting story. 1956, a young couple the name of Elizabeth and I believe it was William. Hold on a second, I'll tell you. David, I'm sorry. Elizabeth and David Hammond. They're a young couple. They're very much in love. And they decide to move to New Hampshire because they wanted to pursue their dream of owning a ski resort. They were both big skiers. In the 1950s, that was not a prevalent outdoor activity the way that it is as much today. But they had a dream of owning a ski resort. They fell in love with the story of the Sound of Music in the Von Trapp family, which it's before the movie was made with Julie Andrews, but they had read the biography about the Von Trapps, who had come over from Austria and started a ski resort in Vermont. And they wanted to kind of model themselves off of that. And they bought a mountain, which was used by the community for skiing, and they decided that they were going to found a ski resort there. And they put up a lodge, and they built a rope toe, which was a ski lift at the time, by which you would have a rope tied at both ends and put it around basically what was a spinning wheel from the inside of a wheel from a truck, and the rope would circulate between the bottom of the hill and the top of the hill. And what you would do is you would grab that rope at the bottom of the hill, and it would tow you up the top of the hill. You grab it with both hands, and you'd hold onto the rope, and you would have put your skis in a track, and it would bring you up to the top of the hill. I used to use these types of lifts when I'd go skiing as a very young boy in the 1960s. They were very popular. They were very inexpensive to run. They were somewhat dangerous because you could go get fall on, and the guy behind you'd come up and run over you, and you know, you have to get out of the tracks really quick, and there were some horrific accidents where the guy wouldn't let go of the rope and get his hands gnarled up in the spinning tire wheel that would go around with the rope on it. Generally they were relatively safe, and it was a means by which you could get pulled up the mountain so you wouldn't have to walk up the mountain and ski back down. So in the 1950s, this was somewhat of a customary lift, but as time would go on, they would build more ski resorts, would get more and more modern, and they would have what is called as a chair lift, where the you'd get on and a chair would bring you up the top of the mountain, and you'd get off the chair at the top and you'd ski down. It's a much more comfortable way to do it. You don't go through dozens of pairs of ski gloves in a season because the rope rips through your gloves. And it's less arduous, you don't have your arms ripped out of your socket by holding onto the rope that is kind of pulling you physically up the mountain. So rope toes became less and less popular, and ski lifts of other sorts, such as gondolas and chairlifts, became more and more popular. Well, this was a small mountain, and the Hammonds didn't have a lot of financial resources, and the amount that they could charge to have people use their mountain became not sufficient enough to do anything other than to maintain the rope toe and pay the insurance and, buy the hot cocoa at the lodge that they would sell. So by 1979, which is, 23 years later after they buy the mountain, they decided that they would give up the give up their dream of owning a ski resort and turn it over to the community. So what they did was they turned it over to a not-for-profit organization that used the mountain, and it became like a ski club. And the ski club would own the rope tow in the mountain and use the packing machine to pack the snow on it. Because they sold it for a nominal amount, because they really just couldn't afford the insurance anymore by the 1970s insurance on ski resorts, because you could have rather serious accidents in a ski accident. So as a result of that, your insurance coverage on a ski resort became very, very expensive. So the Hammonds merely turned it over to this club to be able to operate and own the mountain and all its facilities for a nominal consideration. What the deed said in passing the property over and selling the property was that the Hammonds could always re-enter the property and take possession of it if for two consecutive years the club did not maintain the property as a ski slope and make it available to town residents to use as a ski resort. And the ski club said, well, that's why we exist, is to allow people to ski here. So they accepted that provision. And basically what this was a defeasible estate. It's a condition subsequent where they had a right to re-enter and take the property should the mountain cease to be used for two consecutive years. They had to put that in, that two consecutive years, because sometimes you won't use the mountain because there's no snow in that season. So they said, if for 2 years running, this ski club doesn't operate the mountain as a ski resort, we get to take it over. It's a fee simple, subject to condition subsequent. And what ended up happening was they sold this property in 1979. And in 1989, the ski club was forced with incredible competition. Nobody had rope tows anymore. Nobody wanted to use rope tows anymore. So by 1989, the ski club said, this insurance is killing us. We're not allowed, we're not able to charge enough for those who would use this mountain to be able to even pay the insurance much anymore. So they stopped offering free lessons in 1989 and did not operate the rope tow for the winters of 1992, 93, and 94. So the ski slope was completely closed during the second winter of 93-94. And as a result of that, 9 months later, in October of 1994, the Hammonds filed a notice of a right to re-enter the grounds, and on the grounds that the club had breached the condition by failing to operate skiing facilities for two consecutive years. The club said, that's not true. We still operate. We just don't operate the rope tow. We're still operating it, and we want to continue to do that. So the ski resort went to the New Hampshire courts, where the resort was located, and brought an action saying, we have not violated that condition subsequent. We should be allowed to continue to own the mountain. We didn't violate. They have no right of reentry. Well, what do you think the court found? Well, the court found as follows. Remember, courts don't want to get in the middle of parties' disputes over land rights. And courts generally do not like defeasible estates. They don't like condition subsequents. They don't want you to control property for a period of time after you own it. Remember, this is 15 years later. They don't want the Hammonds to be able to take it. Matter of fact, it's the Hammond's son who actually sues on it because the Hammonds aren't around anymore. David and Susan aren't around anymore. So the Hammond's son, Robert, who now thinks he can renovate the land, is trying to get it back. And the court takes a look at this with great skepticism. What do you think they say? Because they generally don't like you trying to control the property, we say, from beyond the grave, or in this case, at least for a long time after they sold it, the court said, hey, look, it, this specific provision, this condition subsequent, said not that you stop operating the rope troll, not that you stop giving free ski lessons, but that you stop opening and stop operating the mountain as a ski facility. Well, the club said, we never did that. We allowed anybody to ski there that wanted to. Yes, they had, and this is almost kind of a ridiculous argument. Yes, they had to climb up the mountain in order to ski down or have a friend bring him up with a ski-do, you know, a snowmobile, but they could still ski down it. We still ran the packing machine, which they did. And even though we didn't operate the rope tow because we couldn't afford to buy the insurance anymore, we still allowed people to use that facility to ski. Well, the court bought that argument. They said, yeah, I know you don't operate the rope tow anymore, but the rope tow isn't what makes it a ski facility. The mountain with snow does, and you still allow people to ski down it. And as a result, they paid a limited amount of insurance to be able to keep it open on that nominal basis. They had warning signs all over the place. And they allowed people to individually ride a snowmobile up there that they had their friends come up there and take them up. Or they'd allowed them to walk up step by step, put on their skis, and then ski down it. Now, for anybody who's ever walked up a mountain, that's a rather arduous thing to do in ski gear and just be able to ski down. I used to do it as a little kid, but believe me, it's a rather arduous thing to do. And it's not popular. They got almost nobody doing it. But the court said enough people are doing it. The fact that what they said in the decision, the fact that they were using and allowing somebody to take them up the mountain with a snowmobile, wasn't operated by the ski club, but they allowed them to do that on it. They'd ride up on the back of the snowmobile and then ski down. Well, they said that was good enough. And at the end of the day, the court specifically said, we're going to strictly construe these defeasible estates. In this case, the condition subsequent. So when you write a defeasible estate, better make sure that it's not only A, enforceable, but B, more importantly, specific. See you next time. Thanks so much.